The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. Coming up, we will be hearing about something called a living Christmas tree. Of course, there are such things that are green. This one happens to have people on it who sing. That'll be happening this weekend in Sadorus. And first up, we have a feature on the almost annual or semi-annual production of Festival of Lessons and Carols happening at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. And director Richard Rossi will be joining us. Our broadcast today is made possible by these business partners: Common Ground Food Co-op of Urbana, Prairie Boatworks Gallery of Champaign, Atlas Travel of Decatur. These business partners join the Friends of WILL in making great programs possible. We thank you for your support. We just heard music by Johann Pachelbel, who's, of course, best known for his canon, which actually goes with a jig. It is not so often heard, but he's also was an extraordinarily prolific composer of music for the organ. And that was a setting of the chorale Vom Himmel hoch, da komm ich her, from heaven above. And that is music that will come at the beginning of the program Thursday night at Eastern Illinois University, actually put on by Eastern Illinois University at Wesley United Methodist Church in Charleston. It's a recreation of the traditional ceremony of nine lessons and carols that happens annually at King's College, Cambridge in England. Richard Robert Rossi is the conductor of the concert choir and the Collegium Musicum Sinfonia that will be performing that at Eastern. Richard's on the phone with me right now from Charleston. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's wonderful. I'm glad to be here with you.
It's been a while since we've talked, actually, Richard, and so I'm glad we're able to do that again. And so I don't actually remember if the ceremony of Nine Lessons and Carols has become a tradition at Eastern, or is this something new there?
No, we've been doing it since, I think, 2001. And we were doing it every year. Now we try to do it every other year, but it just happens that we did do it 2 years in a row now, which works out great because next year, I don't know if you've looked at the calendar, it's a very odd calendar with Thanksgiving being really late, so we will not do it next year. But we did do it last year, and we try to do it at least every other year.
So if folks want their lessons and carols in or around Charleston, this is the year. In fact,
absolutely.
Thursday is the night. 7:30 is when it all starts. So as this implies, lessons, there are scriptural readings having to do with the birth of Christ and the prediction thereof.
Correct.
And then various carols, which is that sort of a loose term, because there are, in fact, carols. There's also hymns. There's things just for choir. There's things with audience participation. How much are you modeling this directly on the annual event at King's College, Cambridge?
Matter of fact, we model it exactly. So we follow it, matter of fact, right down to even the intonation of Once in Royal David City and with the procession. The choir really starts outside of the sanctuary and the vestibule, matter of fact, and the pitch is given right after the Vom Himmel hoch is performed. And the sopranos will sing the intonation. Of course, I think you probably are aware, maybe with the tradition of King's College, all the boys learn it. And the choir master at that moment will just decide who's going to sing it out as a solo.
Oh, at on the spot.
Yeah, on the spot. It's usually the tradition, and they point to the boy and they sing, so they all have to be prepared.
I did not know that.
Well, I'm not going to do that to my ladies, and they looked at me when I mentioned it to them, like, are you going to do that? And I said, no, no, no. So they, matter of fact, all the sopranos do it together, and matter of fact, my grad student will be conducting because I'm going to play the organ for just that one piece. And they process in, and with the audience slash congregation, however you want to label that, will sing along with us. But we follow exactly the format, and the prayers are exactly as they are at King's College.
So it begins with something called the bidding prayer, which is rather beautiful, and then all the various lessons, which progress through the Old Testament, through the prophets, and the New Testament stories, of course. Now there are many musical pieces that are often done at that event, but of course they're not always the same every year.
Correct.
How did you go about choosing the particular musical selections?
Well, I always keep Once in Royal, because that's Once in Royal David City, that's sort of just a tradition. So that one's always in there. Matter of fact, this is the first year I added another hymn, In the Bleak Midwinter, which I really love. Matter of fact, I was writing one for the choir, and I didn't get it done in time, so I'll probably have to do it another year. And so I needed another carol in there, and so I used that congregational hymn and put that in today. And matter of fact, we're going to probably put oboe on it as well, and I'll probably write a descant just to give a little bit of variety for that. But it's sort of nice because there is enough variety, enough things that change, which really is more the musical aspects, which allows for more of an eclectic choices on our part each year. But certain things, you know, having Silent Night in there, Once in Royal David City, are sort of traditions. And In the Bleak Midwinter is a text that is usually in there. This will be the first Lessons and Carols, though, that I did not do an Ave Maria. I was going to, but then we have the Magnificat in there, so I didn't feel too badly.
So both of those are Latin texts that have to do with either the Annunciation of the coming birth of Jesus to Mary.
Correct.
Or just in praise of Mary in general in case of Ave Maria.
Correct.
The King's College version, I believe, usually is very heavy, as you might expect, on mm-hmm. English music.
Right.
You obviously haven't felt that restriction with a couple of exceptions.
No. Some years I have. I mean, I'd love also putting in, like, some Herbert Howells and stuff, and this year I didn't. But I did, I mean, I put a contemporary, of course, English, some John Rutter at the end. But I do try to keep it a little bit, because, you know, part of what we do here is we teach, so we have to prepare these students to be able to perform a variety of styles and composers and periods, etc. So I didn't want to restrict it just to the music of England.
You have two Italian settings, one of the Magnificat you mentioned by a fellow named Leonardo Leo, which I think we'll hear in a moment. But before that, one of the best known pieces for Baroque pieces for choir and orchestras by Antonio Vivaldi from his Gloria. Does that piece necessarily have an association with Christmas time?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you think about the Bach Magnificat and we think of Handel's Messiah, I think the next one up there is the Vivaldi Gloria. I make that association as well as, you know, dealing with or looking at the Baroque sort of Christmas, and then the Christmas Oratorio by Bach, things like that. But I think the Vivaldi Gloria has been traditionally done a lot at Christmas. It's also accessible for many choirs and orchestras, etc. But I think it's, you know, typical Vivaldi. It's just very happy and jovial and still very musical and has a variety of solos and just lends itself to audience appeal as well.
You're doing just two movements from Vivaldi's Gloria.
Yes, we're just doing the two movements, correct.
And both have soloists and choir in them?
No, neither of them. Matter of fact, the Domine Deus is just soprano solo with oboe. It's really, I always say that the Domine Deus is a duet between the soprano and the oboe. And I'll be playing the continuo part with some of the members of the orchestra. And the Laudamus Te is the traditional duet, you know, the two sopranos sort of echoing back and forth to each other. And that's with strings, sort of more in the, like a violin one and a viola part as well with continuo.
Well, that one's always particularly fun. Let's give a listen to that. This is the Laudamus Te section, and we praise you is what that means. From the Gloria by Antonio Vivaldi. The recording we're going to hear features sopranos Nancy Argenta and Ingrid Atrott with the English concert led by Trevor Pinnock. You can hear it performed by sopranos Yung Jung Cheng and Ashley McHugh with the Collegium Musicum Sinfonia members from Eastern Illinois University, conducted by Richard Rossi as part of the Ceremony of Nine Lessons and Carols Thursday night at 7:30 in Charleston. That was music from Vivaldi's Gloria, Laudamus Te, that section which will be performed as part of the Ceremony of Nine Lessons and Carols happening in Charleston Thursday night at 7:30 at Wesley United Methodist Church. My guest is Richard Rossi, who will be conducting the proceedings. Richard, talk a bit about the ensembles involved in this production.
Well, there's the auditioned top choir, concert choir, and there are about 32 of them. And then we're having members of the Collegium Musicum Sinfonia, which is our early music ensemble, members of the Eastern Symphony Orchestra, who break down into like chamber orchestra and then also sinfonia for smaller works, especially in the Baroque setting for this concert, where we're doing the Vivaldi and then the Leo and a couple of other pieces that utilize a smaller chamber group.
So that ensemble is all students, or does it involve some faculty as the Eastern Orchestra
there,
does?
There are some. The principals will be there from the Symphonic Honors Initiative program, like Terry Colton, Sherry Spicknell, Megan Goff, Kawhi Yu, who's our cello professor, and then Todd Gallagher.
And then the rest are?
All students.
All students,
correct.
At Eastern. And I assume that in that Collegium Musicum, you teach them various principles of
Performance practice? Oh, yes, very much so. Matter of fact, the Collegium is going to do some of the Corelli Christmas Concerto, which we just performed this past weekend. So we thought we'd do a little bit of that even as people are coming in, and we're going to have the flute ensemble play too, just as people are gathering. It's nice. So I told the students, they worked so hard to prepare it for this holiday concert this past Sunday. I said, why don't we do a little bit more of that, on Thursday, so I know they're going to be looking forward to that. But we definitely work on performance practice issues.
Just out of curiosity, have you ever had the chance to see the King's College event yourself?
Not live, but there are, video recordings and DVDs, et cetera. And I've, growing up, I've seen it on TV, too.
Yeah, if it had been live, then I really wanted to grill you on what it's like. But, live at the place. But what's been your impression of what makes this whole thing so special in the original, as done at King's College?
Well, I think part of the, for me, every time I do this, I even said it to the students today when we finished rehearsing just about an hour ago. I said, I love doing the holiday concert like we did Sunday. It has a different tone, but Lessons and Carols for me sort of sets the tone in a more, how should I say, a contemplative setting, really forces you to slow down. And I think it's because of the going back and forth between readings and music, sort of focusing the word with the song, if that makes sense to you. And my experience also goes back a little bit further. Prior to coming here to the Midwest, when I was in Pittsburgh, I was one of the countertenor soloists at the Episcopal Cathedral in Pittsburgh. So, in addition to our Nine Lessons and Carols, we always had Evensong and things like that, which we did all of these pieces. So I remember doing that, and I was even a monk at the time. So I remember how, this is really beautiful, And I didn't do Lessons and Carols at the Abbey, matter of fact. I really didn't start that until I came here to the Midwest. But it was built upon my experience both watching, that on Christmas, sometimes it would come up if you watch TV, Nine Lessons and Carols comes up, or sometimes before Christmas on TV. And my experiences at the Episcopal Cathedral, which of course is the Anglican Church here in America.
You mentioned the Abbey, which, of course, listeners won't know what you mean. This was a place where you were heavily involved for a long time.
Correct, yeah. I was a Benedictine monk for 11 years back at Latrobe, Pennsylvania, at St. Vincent Archabbey. Matter of fact, where I had a lot of early music going on there, too. I had a camerata and a chamber orchestra as well as many. I also had, like, three other choirs, et cetera. So, and troubadours in the college, which modeled themselves after the camerata, which was more professional.
And you don't feel any tension between the Catholic tradition and the Anglican tradition?
Oh, no. Matter of fact, I think the abbot did.
Oh.
Well, not him per se, but with the fact that I was singing for the Episcopals as a monk. At the time, I was doing my master's at Carnegie Mellon, my orchestral and my choral master's. And during that time, I said, oh, I would really love to sing with the Episcopals. And he wasn't really thrilled because I think he wanted me to come back to the Abbey every Sunday and do music, which wasn't feasible with my schedule. So I did join the ranks of the Anglican Episcopal Church in Pittsburgh with a lot of my friends, and that was all paid professional chorus. And we did some really heavy stuff and wonderful music every Sunday.
Well, it's an enormous, both churches have an enormous musical tradition.
Yeah.
And of course,
yeah.
They diverged a bit when King Henry VIII decided he wanted to get divorced.
Yeah.
This piece you mentioned earlier by Leonardo Leo, who was approximate contemporary of Vivaldi, a little younger, of the Magnificat. This is a piece that, or Magnificat, if you like, that's a piece that I had never heard before. Where did you find that?
Yeah, matter of fact, I have it, my copy, since back at the Abbey. They don't sell it anymore either, matter of fact. I had my own copy. And I'm glad I kept it because it's impossible to get it anymore. It was through Walton. What I love about this piece is that literally within 10 minutes, this piece goes through almost every form of counterpoint and contrapuntal writing in that short amount of time. And in teaching, you know, young students, like if we can't do a larger work or if you don't want to take the time to do the whole thing or just do a whole Vivaldi Gloria for lessons and carols, this is such a great addition, and it also lends itself to educational opportunities in teaching the different styles, dynamics, articulations, and text stress, and when it wasn't, or is this really counterpoint? I mean, there's even fugal in it. So it's just always been a charm. Yeah, I was wondering if you knew it, because I think it's just a great piece.
No, there's, in fact, the only time I've ever heard of Leonardo Leo is in association with church music. And I don't know anything about him, but I assume he was a church musician of some kind himself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He had a lot of students. And, he sort of is best known for his Stile Antico in his church music. This, matter of fact, is a good example. The other reason I also like to do it is in Viennese style. There's no violas. So it's this wonderful, florid, sometimes, sort of Michael Haydn-ish style of violin playing with obviously the figured bass continuo normal, but the violins sort of lend themselves to adding the extra little color to the piece, and he's sort of charming in the same way that Michael Haydn writes in that style. But he was also known to be a really sort of a taskmaster with his students. He had a lot of students, but they always they really loved him. They were very devoted to him. Matter of fact, and I don't know if you know this, but he died while sitting at the harpsichord.
Some would say that's the way to go,
I suppose,
if you're a harpsichordist.
Well, I always say, I want to go conducting the Mozart Requiem. I know that sounds so morbid, but it's sort of like, I want to die on the podium.
I think that there was at least one well-known conductor who died conducting the Verdi Requiem, but I can't think who that might have been.
Yes, no, offhand. I do remember reading that when I was preparing that.
Well, let's hope this isn't prophetic, at least not anytime soon.
Yeah, no.
But does that, Richard, make you reluctant to program the Mozart Requiem now that you've said that?
Yeah, I know you. It's funny. No, because I'm sort of hoping that I will be able to do it a million times before
there you go.
I leave. So hopefully it'll be on the millionth time. How's that?
Well, here is a performance that you led with a previous version of the Eastern Illinois University Concert Choir and the Sinfonia of Leonardo Leo's Magnificat, which will be recreated Thursday night as part of the Lessons and Carols in Charleston. You're listening to Live and Local. Music by Leonardo Leo, born in 1694, about 9 years, well, it was in fact 9 years after Bach, just to put a little perspective on it. His setting of the Magnificat with the concert choir and Sinfonia, Collegium Musicum Sinfonia of Eastern Illinois University, Richard Rossi conducting. He's my guest on Live and Local, this portion of the program, as they are preparing their Ceremony of Nine Lessons and Carols, which will be presented at Wesley United Methodist Church in Charleston Thursday night at 7:30. You mentioned earlier, Richard, that you're one of the nods to the English musical tradition, aside from a couple of the hymns, is a more contemporary, he is a contemporary English composer and conductor named John Rutter. And you're doing a couple of settings of his. Why Rutter as opposed to, you know, the hundreds of other contemporary English church composers?
Well, if you notice, I sort of bookended the concert with a Gregorian chant arrangement, of course, I did in the beginning, and then Rutter's arrangement of the Father's Love Begotten. Matter of fact, that setting, these two settings of Rutter, are not heard that often. Well, of the Father is not heard that often. And it's a beautiful setting with strings and organ. And, you know, I know you feel this way, I'm sure, as you're playing music even at church. You know, when you bring strings in, you want to make sure you utilize them as much as possible. So I thought, oh, here are two settings that are really lush and beautiful with strings. And also the tone of Lessons and Carols, what I try to do is sort of build it up. And if you notice that the Leo, the Magnificat, is sort of right in the middle. And then the tenor of the music sort of starts to relax a little bit as we go through to the end, because I sort of like to bring it back down in a more peaceful manner. And having that Gregorian chant setting of the Father's Love Begotten with strings is just really gorgeous with this beautiful descant on the last verse. And then I've done What Sweeter Music before, usually with big orchestra and a large chorus. And I told them this time, I really want to do it with the chamber group, because I just think itself, it really needs to be nuanced and phrased gracefully that I feel a smaller group can handle better. It's a little trickier than a lot of people realize. But, of course, you know, orchestra members always sometimes complain about this piece, because you probably are aware of it. It's in G flat major. And Rutter was not stupid when he put it in that key. He knew it was going to be warm and lush and warm in the voice, because those keys are just beautiful. So anyway, when ending the concert with this just sort of brings it back to more peaceful closure.
Well, this is the peaceful closure or near closure of what will be happening Thursday night. There is a prayer and a hymn to follow it in the actual program, but it's certainly beautiful music by John Rutter. Richard Rossi will be conducting the proceedings and is director of orchestral and choral activities at Eastern Illinois University. And Richard, as always, we appreciate your joining us on the show.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me on.
Here's John Rutter himself conducting his own What Sweeter Music here on Live and Local. That was music by John Rutter called What Sweeter Music, with the composer himself conducting his Cambridge Singers and the City of London Sinfonia. That will be some of the concluding music as part of the Festival of Nine Lessons and Carols being presented by Eastern Illinois University in Charleston tomorrow night at 7:30 at Wesley Methodist Church. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Support for today's broadcast comes in part from Community Blood Services of Illinois. Blood donations decrease at holiday time, but patient need remains the same year-round. There are no substitutes for donated blood, and donation takes only 45 minutes. Blood donation, it's about life. More information is available at 367-2202. Speaking of life, you have probably heard the expression a living Christmas tree, and I discovered through a Google search that that can mean a number of different things. But what it means in the context of an event happening in Sadorus on Saturday is a 30-foot-tall structure covered with not only lights but also 32 singers who will be performing carols with some audience participation in this event. Has happened a number of times in Sadorus. It's going to be at St. Paul Lutheran Church on East Church Street in Sadorus for three events this weekend, three performances, as it were, this weekend, Saturday at 4:30 and 7 o'clock, and then Sunday as well at 4:30, and it's free. I have with me on the program two of the folks involved in A Living Christmas Tree, Bonnie and David Smith. And I appreciate your coming on the show very much.
Thank you.
So I said it has recurred. How often has it recurred, and since when?
Started in 1993. It doesn't occur every year. About every other year, we've done it 9 times.
And have you? What's your involvement, and what was it when it got started?
I wasn't involved. Bonnie was the member.
We weren't here originally. We lived out of state at that time. Our director, Jan Fisher, it was a dream of hers, and she had seen it performed someplace else, and she got the blueprint, per se, of how to erect this structure to hold adult bodies to be able to sing, and presented it to the church council, and they agreed on it in 1993. And it has been done, like David said, 9 times since then. We've been in it the last 3 times. This is our 3rd time to be members of the choir that are doing it.
And are the members of the choir at St. Paul Lutheran Church, or can they come from anywhere?
Anywhere.
And how does one get involved? I mean, were these handpicked people? Did somebody put up a notice that said, come audition to sing on top of a Christmas tree?
So most of them are members of St. Paul's choir. We've got to get a few ringers, so to speak, once in a while, if we're not strong in one of the voices. But most of them are acquaintances of the church or Jan.
And the notion of the living Christmas tree, any sense of how common it is? I didn't really look that up to see, you know, is this something that is done in any
community?
I don't
know of one anywhere in the area. I really don't know. That's a good question.
I saw one from a large church on TV a few years ago out east.
And what makes it different? I mean, I'm actually looking at a picture of it that you brought along, and it really does look like a Christmas tree.
Yes.
That has sprouted people in choir robes.
That's right. That's right.
And what makes it different, other than visually, if any other way than visually, than just having the choir sing?
Well, there's narration that goes along with it. We have, actually, it's going to be John Paul, going to be our narrator. He narrates part of it, and then we sing a carol to coordinate with that part of the narration. And the church just recently installed screens. So this year, for the first time, we're going to have pictures on the screens, like what they would use normally for the hymns and liturgy during a service. There will be pictorial adaptations to enhance the singing and the narration.
Not only that, but there's thousands of lights, and the lights are coordinated with the singing. There's the individual lights, and then there's a cross down the center of the tree, and at the top of the tree there's a star. And they actually have a light crew there that, as we sing, the music plays, the lights come on and off, different colors, the cross by itself sometimes, the star, and so forth and so on.
So the light technicians, so to speak, have to practice with,
with
the singers.
It's like choreographed lighting. And then we also, for one of the songs, we have individual candles that we will use, and we also have handbells for one of the songs.
That's a lot of stuff to pile onto a tree.
Right.
It's a lot of stuff to pile on us.
Well, yeah, that too. We're talking about the Living Christmas Tree that's going to be presented on Saturday and Sunday in Sedaris at St. Paul Lutheran Church. Right. 4:30 and 7 on Saturday, 4:30 on Sunday. And, you know, as you would expect, there's lots of carols that will be familiar to most, and then a few that will be familiar to a few, and some that won't be familiar to many, if any, people. Here's one of those that I would put in the middle category. This is one that I know and love, but many people may not. It's an African American spiritual called "Rise Up, Shepherd, and Follow." I think you said that's on.
Yes.
This one will be sung by the choir, as mm-hmm. opposed to with participation by the audience.
Correct.
Right. Right.
And we happen to have this is not really a representation of what your group will sound like, because this is six men. They're the King's Singers, but this is always a nice arrangement. It's Carl Davis's arrangement of "Rise Up, Shepherd, and Follow."
Star of Bethlehem, rise up, shepherd, and follow.
Rise up, shepherd, and follow. Sort of a jazzed up arrangement of that African-American spiritual. Carl Davis made the arrangement. The King's Singers sang it, and that's one of the carols that will be performed by the choir on the Christmas tree, the Living Christmas Tree at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sedaris this weekend. My guests on this portion of Live and Local to tell us about it are Bonnie and David Smith, who will be among the singers. And are you regular members of the choir there at the church as well?
So I'm a lifetime member of the church, but right now I'm not in the choir. I play for other churches, so I'm not able to be.
You play as a pianist or organist or both?
Both. Yes.
And how did you get involved in this one then?
Well, like I say, at Christmas time she draws in people that aren't necessarily there during the year, so we're just extras.
And this, the whole event is in part to raise money.
Yes.
Even though, now how does it work, since the admission is free?
Right.
Yet you're raising money somehow.
Right.
We take a love offering each service. And normally we pick two organizations to support. This year, we've chosen the Salvation Army Canteen and the Sedaris Food Pantry. The canteen, as the name says, is associated with Salvation Army, but they're a ministry to the homeless. They go out three times a week to the homeless, take them gloves, blankets, clothes, boots, canned foods, thermoses of hot coffee when it's cold, and just anything else that they have and the homeless need.
And then the food bank, I assume, is like most food banks.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's located at Sedaris Village Hall. They are going to distribute the next time, December the 14th, from 5 to 6:30, and they serve everyone that's west of Route 57, south of Monticello Road, east of Piatt County line, and north of County Road 000 churches. County Road 000. Go ahead.
It's a very specific location where they discovered that it was not being served. And so it's been developed to specifically serve that region of people. They have a once-a-month distribution at the Village Hall.
So I imagine that the various Salvation Army branches or whatever they're called, and the same with the various food banks, have to sort of define themselves by a territory, or they can't actually meet those territories.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Even though it's free to get in, it does require a ticket. Does that imply that this event usually, quote-unquote, sells out?
We look for large crowds, and each year we're not sure. We just, it's hard to tell. We do keep an eye on the ticket sales, so to speak, but this is simply to control how many is it each time, so we don't get, everybody doesn't choose the same one.
Is St. Paul Lutheran Church a large place, so can you get a lot of people in there?
It holds about 200.
That's plenty.
Yes. It's a nice size crowd.
When it's full and we do the Living Christmas Tree, it's a nice service. It's a nice program.
So you use the term service. Is it in fact a church service in which there is also singing, or is it essentially a concert?
We do have audience participation during part of it. We have what's called the Carol Medley, and we invite the people to sing with us, the congregation to sing with us, and as Bonnie mentioned, the screens, they have the words to those songs for the congregation to sing along with us.
But it's not in the context of a church service.
No. Okay. It is a concert, or cantata, is what it would properly be called.
So if one particularly enjoys carols but doesn't necessarily feel like being in church, so to speak, you'll be in a church, but you won't be in church.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
And no sermon.
Offering. Right.
Well,
just a donation.
Well, love offering.
An offering which you can participate in or not. And, of course, you hope that people will, because it's always for a good cause. About 32 singers doing a number of carols, including this one, which I thought I'd play right now, because we're in fact in the church year, we're in the season of Advent, and this one is the one that on the list you gave me that is appropriate to Advent. It's O Come, O Come Emmanuel. We're going to hear the Roger Wagner Chorale. You can probably guess who conducts a choir of that name here on Live and Local. Roger Wagner Chorale, conducted, of course, by Roger Wagner. That's their version of O Come Emmanuel, which will be on the program of the Living Christmas Tree, which is actually called Christmas Time, a Living Christmas Tree performance, Saturday for two performances at 4:30 and 7 o'clock, and Sunday afternoon at 4:30 at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Sadorus, Illinois. Proceeds to benefit the Salvation Army, Partnering the Homeless, and Sadorus Food Pantry. It's a free event, but you do need to get tickets. My guests for this portion of Live and Local are David and Bonnie Smith, who are involved in this production this year. And how does one go about getting these free tickets?
Okay, Kevin, like you said, they are free, but in order to semi-control the size of the audience, they can call ahead of time, and we have a will call table. The number would be 217-598-2259 or 217-867-2015. And those can be waiting for them at the table when they get there, or if they would prefer, we could, well, today's already Tuesday and I don't know if we can depend on the mail to get them there by Saturday, but yeah. We'll call is available.
Why don't you repeat those numbers in case anybody didn't have a pen handy?
217-598-2259 or 217-867-2015.
So anybody coming should plan to sing themselves.
Yes, by all means. Yes.
So it's not...
And don't forget the Hallelujah Chorus is the grand finale.
And is that one that everybody can participate in, or is that choir only?
Well, you know, it's loud enough that if you want to sing along, I don't think anybody would notice. It's irresistible if you've ever done it.
So is this with piano, organ accompaniment, both? Depends
taped
on the
music.
Recorded music.
Yes.
Okay, so this will be a recorded orchestra.
Right.
Mm-hmm. joining the 32 or so singers who are planted in this tree.
That's right.
Which looks pretty elaborate to me. And then, of course, an elaborate light show involved in that as well. And lots of carols both by the choir and, of course, the audience always welcome to join in. 30-foot tall structure. I assume those who are on top don't have any problem with heights.
That's me. It's way up there. It's warm, too. By the time you get all those lights and the people's bodies and, you know, we have like, what, a 2-foot span between us and the back side of the tree and where we're standing. So it's close quarters and lots of lights, heat, and it's warm, but we have fans back there too.
And we'll leave it a mystery how one gets up into this.
Yes. And they're welcome to come back after the performance and see, because I'm sure just seeing from the front, it's quite a curiosity how we do get up there. But it's very sturdy, strong 2x4s, mm-hmm, lots and lots mm-hmm. of 2x4s, mm-hmm. and narrow staircases.
Sidoras's living Christmas tree since 1993, mm-hmm. off and on, at St. Paul Lutheran Church. And Bonnie and David, thanks very much for joining us on the show and letting us know about it.
Thank
Our
you.
Pleasure.
Hope to
Thank
see you,
you
all there.
Among the newer musical creations that will be on the program is something called simply Christmas Time, hence the name of the whole program. And apparently this tune appears in there, best known as, if I have the right tune, Carol of the Bells. Once again, it's the Roger Wagner Chorale on Live and Local. WILO's program today is made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Ballet, presenting a holiday tradition, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker, performed with live dance, chorus, and orchestra with Sinfonia da Camera at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. The Nutcracker's final performances will be this Saturday and Sunday. This is 90.9 WILL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.